Chapter 32. After the sending of this letter, the poor young fellow's mind was more at ease than it had been previously. The blow had been struck, and he had borne it. His cruel goddess had shaken her wings and fled, and left him alone and friendless, but Virtutsua. And he had to bear him up, at once the sense of his right, and the feeling of his wrongs, his honor and his misfortune. As I have seen men waking and running to arms at a sudden trumpet, before emergency a manly heart leaps up resolute, meets the threatening danger with undaunted countenance, and, whether conquered or conquering, faces it always. Ah! No man knows his strength or his weakness, till occasion proves them. If there be some thoughts and actions of his life from the memory, of which a man shrinks with shame, sure there are some which he may be proud to own and remember. Forgiven injuries, conquered temptations now, and then, and difficulties vanquished by endurance. It was these thoughts regarding the living, far more than any great poignancy of grief respecting the dead, which affected Harry Esmond, whilst in prison after his trial. But it may be imagined that he could take no comrade of misfortune into the confidence of his feelings, and they thought it was remorse and sorrow for his patron's loss which affected the young man, in error of which opinion he chose to leave them. As a companion he was so moody and silent that the two officers, his fellow sufferers, left him to himself mostly, like little very likely, what they knew of him, consoled themselves with dice, cards, and the bottle, and whiled away their own captivity in their own way. It seemed to Esmond as if he lived years in that prison, and was changed and aged when he came out of it. At certain periods of life we live years of emotion in a few weeks and look back on those times as on great gaps between the old life and the new. You do not know how much you suffer in those critical maladies of the heart, until the disease is over, and you look back on it afterwards. During the time, the suffering is at least sufferable. The day passes in more or less of pain, and the night wears away somehow. 'Tis only in after days that we see what the danger has been as a man out a hunting or riding for his life looks at a leap, and wonders how he should have survived the taking of it. Oh, dark months of grief and rage, of wrong and cruel endurance. He is old now who recalls you. Long ago he has forgiven and blessed the soft hand that wounded him. But the mark is there, and the wound is cicatrized only no time, tears, caresses, or repentance, can obliterate the scar. We are indocile to put up with grief, however. Refissimus rates quasas. We tempt the ocean again and again, and try upon new ventures. Esmond thought of his early time as a novitiate, and of this past trial as an initiation, before entering into life as our young Indians undergo tortures silently, before they pass to the rank of warriors in the tribe. The officers, meanwhile, who were not let into the secret of the grief which was gnawing at the side of their silent young friend, and being accustomed to such transactions, in which one comrade or another was daily paying the forfeit of the sword, did not, of course, bemoan themselves very inconsolably about the fate of their late companion in arms. This one told stories of former adventures of love, or war, or pleasure, in which poor Frank Esmond had been engaged. T'other recollected how a constable had been bilked, or a tavern bully beaten. Whilst my lord's poor widow was sitting at his tomb worshipping him as an actual saint and spotless hero, so the visitor said who had news of Lady Castlewood. And Westbury and Macartney had pretty nearly had all the town to come and see them. The duel, its fatal termination, the trial of the two peers and the three commoners concerned, had caused the greatest excitement in the town. The prints and newsletters were full of them. The three gentlemen in Newgate were almost as much crowded as the bishops in the Tower, or a highwayman before execution. We were allowed to live in the governor's house, as hath been said, both before trial and after condemnation, waiting the king's pleasure. Nor was the real cause of the fatal quarrel known, so closely at my lord and the two other persons who knew it kept the secret, but everyone imagined that the origin of the meeting was a gambling dispute. Except fresh air, the prisoners had, upon payment, most things they could desire. Interest was made that they should not mix with the vulgar convicts, whose ribald choruses and loud laughter and curses could be heard from their own part of the prison, where they and the miserable debtors were confined pell-mell. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.